Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Another segment of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight, you've joined us for our once a month segment called Hot Topics. And basically what Hot Topics is about is we kind of look at the news headlines across the country and decide what we think is worth re-mentioning, or maybe if you didn't catch it the first time, you'll catch it here, Center Stage. And so tonight, we're just going to talk about some topics that jumped out at me when I first read them, and I'm sure you pretty much have the same reaction. And so we're waiting on a couple of our panelists to get here tonight. We've got Mr. Khufu M.G. Kush in the building. We're also waiting on A.J. Houston and Major Christopher Bonds to join us. But tonight we just saw some things that we really thought were odd. First of all, November 13th and 14th, we went through GridX. We're going to talk about that. If you didn't know it happened, it is something that did occur very quietly, was not covered by mainstream media. That's one thing we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the criminalization of homelessness. That's happening in parts of the country. We're going to talk about something called the knockout game, if you haven't heard that. Teenagers across the country are playing a very violent game called the knockout game. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to give an update on Obamacare. Lots going on with that in the news every single day. We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about the military purging a lot of the top rank. So not sure what's going on with that. So we're going to cover a little bit of that. We're also going to talk about the Renisha McBride story. That's the young lady that was shot and killed in Dearborn, Michigan. She was basically seeking help after having had a car accident. She was kind of dazed, and she went looking for help, obviously went to the wrong house, and ended up dead. She was shot and killed by the homeowner, who said that he was in fear for his life. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. We're also going to talk about FEMA camps. If y'all don't think they're real, trust me, they are. We're going to talk about FEMA camps. And we're also going to talk about life without parole for nonviolent offenses. Can you imagine stealing something that had a value of under $50 and ending in prison for life? It's happening right here in the U.S. We're hearing like 3,200 people right here in the U.S. are in jail serving life sentences for petty crimes. Also, we're going to talk about the NSA, the National Security Agency, and how they're eavesdropping on your phone calls. Yeah, it's happening. It's happening for real, y'all. And so, last but not least, we're going to cover something that Lindsey Williams was on the show a couple weeks ago, and I had a conversation with him after the show, a couple of days after the show, and he told me an update on exactly when they expect to collapse the dollar. So that's something we definitely want to bring to your attention. So let me open up the phone lines. Mr. Khufu Kush is in the building, and Mr. A.J. Houston has arrived. So good evening, gentlemen. How are you all? Welcome to Center Stage.
How's everybody doing? Y'all doing all right?
I'm good. Khufu, how you doing?
Just fine, Carrie and A.J. and Christopher.
Christopher, we're waiting on Christopher. And if y'all wondering who Khufu Kush is, that's Carl Mitchell last week. This week he's Khufu Kush. He goes by that name, y'all. So if y'all confused, like, who is Khufu Kush? Khufu Kush is also known as Carl Mitchell. Listen, y'all, let's get started. There's so much going on in the news. I couldn't really decide, like, where I wanted to go. I mean, it's so much out there. And every day we're bombarded with so many stories, it's hard to keep up. And I just kept emailing you guys stories because I couldn't figure out where to stop. So let's start with that knockout game that the teenagers are doing. And basically, I'm just going to go with a Wikipedia explanation for what the knockout game is. And basically, they say it's a violent activity played by attacking an innocent pedestrian in an attempt to knock him or her out or knock him unconscious with just one blow. I mean, just somebody totally at random, you just happen, you know, the group of kids are walking wherever, and they just come upon a pedestrian and just for no reason, unprovoked, just reach out and just punch that person and try to render them unconscious. What do y'all think about that?
But there was a movie about 3 years ago, three or 4 years ago, that was doing the same thing. It was these people, but a lot of things, I think a lot of things that's going on and a lot of derivatives we're finding are from movies and things that they've seen somewhere else and they just made it into something because the video games are so realistically violent that you at least want to see how it feels to do it for real.
Wow. So you think they're with unknowingly becoming brainwashed to do these things?
No, I think it's the peer pressure, the challenge of being around somebody and say, hey, let's try this. And then everybody catch on because everybody wants to see who gets the most YouTube hits. And it don't even matter on YouTube if it's illegal. as long as I get a million hits, I'm popular. I can do, you know, it's just like the Hide Your Mama, Hide Your Wife. You know, that song that came out, the guy was on every talk show for a minute and just disappeared because that's all he had.
Well, you know, but I guess, and Kufu, way in before I jump in on that, you agree with that?
Well, I saw it a few years ago where they was knocking each other out. They was called knockout game. I didn't know they were doing on pedestrians. Now, I guess they're going to extend it to some people. But but they've had a game there for a few years now.
I remember it was something a couple years ago because I saw somebody that I know doing that. And I didn't want to get them in trouble. And they were a neighbor's kid, and I thought it was the most stupid thing. I think they called it a jump-in, where a whole bunch of kids would just be hitting each other or fighting, or two people would be fighting and the crowd would just be just boosting it on. And I wanted to do something, but I felt paralyzed because I said, if I say something, then the neighbor's going to say, well, why did you get my kid in trouble? But I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. And that kind of tapered off, and now we're looking at the jump-in thing. I just didn't know kids were so easily influenced by peer pressure, because back in the day, we had peer pressure too. But we knew only just so far when we let somebody send us, as we used to call it, send us out. And I guess I'm kind of dating myself with that term. But we didn't let nobody send us out to this degree. So why do you think the peer pressure is so great for young people?
Well, we didn't just have the peer pressure, but we had a community around us where the lady down the street knew your parents. And we didn't have cell phones and couldn't text message, but they would get the information before you made it back home that you was out there acting up. And now the parents don't even tell their kids to stop acting up.
You know, I guess I'm at a loss because, first of all, I don't know if you all saw the video that was kind of going viral on YouTube about the knockout game, but this one guy, that I think he was a teacher, they said, that was walking through an alley, and he's just walking toward the exit of the alley, and the kids are kind of entering the alley. And just as they pass each other, one of the kids reach out and they punch the guy. And the guy falls. He didn't see it coming. He completely is off balance. He falls, and he hits his head on the cement. You know, you and I know, we know that this guy could have died. I mean, there's so many people that have, you know, concussions, that die from concussions. And so I wonder if the kids are even looking at just how dangerous this game is, or do they even care? Fufu Kush.
I don't think they care. I think it's just more of a popularity thing, you know, for us wanting to be popular. You know, like they had a slap game. I saw a few weeks ago where they were slapping each other. And they were slapping themselves almost asleep. And then, you know, every now and then someone would get mad and throw a fist and try to knock the other one out, but it was mostly a slapping thing there, too. So they got both of them going, a slapping game and a straight knockout game.
Well, I guess my problem with that is with back then we had TV, y'all. We had TV and radio, and that was it. I mean, seriously, that was it. These kids have got iPhones and video games and, you know, I mean, I think we did have a little Pac-Man back in the day, but we didn't have video games like they have today and the flat-screen TVs and, you know, all the other different the new technologies that are out today. So why is it with all the technology that we have out there and all the different ways that kids have to amuse themselves today that they would find fun in knocking someone out?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I guess they're trying to play the tough man game. You know, these days, kids, they want to be tough. You know, they want to be thrown up, and they want to be up in front of their friends. And you know, and so it's like I tell my stepson all the time. He has a name. They call him Fooly. And so I try to explain to him what Fooly meant, you know. And so they want to be popular. It's something that they want to do stupid things.
I guess so. I'm to this point, just like you said, you're talking to your stepson. How much of it is the parent's responsibility? Because, and I'm not a parent, and I'm the first to admit that, but I think if I bring a child into the world, I have some responsibility for that child's actions until at least you're an adult. And so I'm trying to figure out exactly how much of of this do we hold the parents responsible for?
Well, the parents are responsible. The parents are responsible, but nobody's actually, you know, until they get caught, then that's when they say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, they call their parents to get them out of jail, to get them out of trouble. But the parents are still responsible, but a lot of parents lose the handle on their kids when they're 11 and 12 and 13, so when they're 15 and 16, they don't know where they are, they don't know when they come home, they don't know where they're going.
Hmm.
And one of the most popular games out there is, it's the fifth version of the game. I'm trying to think of the name of the game right now. I had it on the tip of my tongue just a minute ago. It's the game where you have a gang and you ride around and you carjack somebody, you get a car, you rob a bank, you kill some people. Oh, auto theft.
Okay. Five. And that was a video game. Isn't that a video game too?
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto, something like that.
Yeah, Grand Theft. Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 5 is out. And
that's correct. You know, these kids these days, I guess, some of them are, you know, they're more hard to deal with because, you know, they have this new thing with this ADHD, and so that's supposed to be attention disorder, and so some students are hard to deal with.
It's got noise in their background. ADHD back in our day too, but there was a good remedy for it, and that was a belt. I mean, and I know today, you know, you hit your kid and they call CPS on you, but I mean, somebody's got to take responsibility, you know, and you can, out of fear, say, well, I'm not going to hit my child because I don't want CPS to get me, but eventually either CPS is going to get you or the system is going to get your child. It's just one or the other. And so you have to make your decision as a parent, I think, as to which you're going to let it be. I think I would take my chances. I think because ultimately. So what, AJ?
Well, I always tell my sons, I say, look, we got two options. You can either take this because I ain't buying no cigarette.
Ooh.
So that's where you're going to be locked up at. I ain't buying no cigarette, so. Take this, you're gonna deal with me or deal with the system. And the system ain't nothing nice. The system don't care about you.
I mean, it is, you know, the thing is people do not realize once you get into the system now that it is here in the state we're in, it's three strikes and you're out. And so you can get yourself caught up in that system, but all of a sudden, you know, once you commit that first crime, then, you know, it's off to, you know, easily getting yourself caught up in a system where it's three strikes and you're finding yourself in prison for a long, long time. Major Buns is with us. Major Buns, you want to weigh in on that knockout game? Did I? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I opened his line. Good evening, Major Buns. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good. You want to weigh in on that knockout game we were talking about?
Oh, reference to the three strikes?
Well, no, in reference to that knockout game where the kids are I don't know if you saw, I thought I sent it to you. I was sending y'all so much, I forgot to send you this one. The knockout game is where kids, a group of kids are hanging out together, and they randomly pick someone and just walk up to them and knock them, I mean, or hit them so hard, attempting to knock them out in one blow. Were you not aware of that guy?
No,
okay.
No, I wasn't really aware of that. Wow.
Okay. I'm sorry. Well, I meant to send it to you. But that's basically what they're doing, a group of teens hanging out together. You may be in a shopping center parking lot. You may be in an alley, wherever. They see you walking along, and typically they pick on people that are by themselves. And one of them will just randomly walk up to you and just knock you out. Period.
He may knock you out, Major.
That seems to get a lot like the games of modern day and old days for the initiations. And, I mean, there's so much going on in terms of both in the military and the civilian community in terms of, I guess, what people are trying to do to occupy their time. But something of that nature is definitely, it's horrendous, it's detrimental, and that type of mentality, I mean, it's raising the level of the violence in the youth. And, I mean, things like that is just unacceptable. And it's like, where are kids coming up with this? Are they learning this at home? I mean, just to be able to brainstorm something just so violent.
You know what? I can get it if one kid was dumb enough to do it. I think where I'm shocked at is that it's catching on, and they say across the country. And I'm thinking, you know, back in the day, what I told them before you joined this major is back in the day, there would always be a kid that was trying to send everybody else out. And my mother used to always say, you don't follow people dumber than you are. And so I would always look at that kid as though, oh, listen, I'm too smart to listen to you. And so I would always think, I'm not going to let you send me out. And so I'm wondering, where is that gauge for kids today where they don't see somebody is sending them out, potentially going to get them imprisoned or possibly killed? Because, you know, with this catching on and everybody's toting a gun today, it's just a matter of time before one of these kids are going to end up dead. You know, and then you don't want to, you know, it's a fine line between saying, well, they're just a kid, and the fact that they just hit someone for nothing, randomly just walked up and socked someone. So if that person, in return, took their gun and shot them, you know, I don't know that stand your ground doesn't apply. You know, I mean, that's just me, y'all. We're going to go to the phone lines. I'm going to leave that alone. Y'all, we're going to go to 843-276. Good evening. You're on Center Stage. That's 843-276. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, Ms. Hines. This is T. Smitty. How you doing?
Hey, T. Smitty. How you doing?
I'm doing. My birthday was last week. I'm still waiting on that gift you promised me. But
it's coming.
I ain't holding my breath. But anyway, I saw that video the other day, and I saw one of those groups. They hit it was a bunch of black kids. They hit a white guy, sucker punched him. And his head hit the curb. What if he had died? They'd be going on charges right now.
Yeah.
And what if they hit, let's say they use black and white here. What if they hit a white guy, he got up and shot them, especially the group of five or six of them. We'd be hearing everybody cry racism.
Yeah.
My beef with this, when y'all talking about something to do, it's like the news of the day, it's kind of, this stuff trickles down, starting at an early age. They talking about now, like these youth leagues, the Pop Warner League saw a decrease in thousands over the year. Now, but these kids aren't doing any other activities. They're just sitting at home playing PlayStation. And my other thing is, every one of those kids have a talent. But all those parents giving a damn enough to help them realize and accentuate those talents? No. Because, those parents are not involved. And it starts with being an involved parent. Not saying you got to whoop them, but you got to be involved. Maybe that if they don't want to do right, you put them out the house, make them a ward of the state. If they want to act like a grown-up, treat them like a grown-up. I just believe it's kind of like my last thing. It's kind of like with George Carlin had that bit where he said the whole child worship. That's what it's turning into. It's like people are scared to even discipline their kids. I'm like, discipline them. If they don't want to do right, they don't have to live in my house. I guess how I look at it.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the child worship thing. What are you talking about?
Like George Carlin, go on YouTube and just type in child worship. It's like a little bit he had. And it was talking about like how you can't do it. Can't do anything to him.
Oh, because the state will get you for hitting your child.
Yeah, a lot of stuff like that. Like how you discipline them back in the day. Hey, you can't even yell at them anymore. They'll call that verbal abuse. It's just a mess now. And those kids are smart. And like I said, each kid has a talent. But their talents aren't being accentuated by these parents because these parents aren't put any – these parents put more effort going on Facebook talking about scandal all day than spending time with their kids.
I agree. I agree 100%. And, you know, and the thing is, I really do believe, you know, until your child is 18, you got to take some responsibility for your child. You cannot say, I can't handle him. But, you know, at the same time, you're turning them loose on the world. I mean, I can't agree with that. I can't agree that you can let a monster just go loose and you say you can't handle him. Then you need to get yourself some help with that kid. But you can't just say you're afraid and turn him loose on the rest of us. That's just my take on that. Thank you, T. Smitty. Yeah, that was T. Smitty. He has a talk show here on Center Stage as well. I mean, on Blog Talk Radio as well. We're going to area code 404-343. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
How you doing, Carrie?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay. I was calling about the knockout game. Carrie, I swear I didn't know nothing about it. I just found out about it. I went on YouTube and I saw the videos.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of black kids going around just knocking folks out. And
terrorizing.
I saw one kid just knock a white guy out so hard until he could have killed him. He really could have killed him. The guy hit his head, you know, when he fell to the ground. He hit his head. He could have really killed him. And I'm thinking that perhaps there are a lot of children, you know, with psychiatric problems that need to be addressed because, you know, I just feel like a lot of these kids have psychiatric issues. And the parents, I guess they don't really care enough to try to get the kids some help. I mean, the parents know that their children have these type of anger issues, but they just don't care enough.
But you notice in that video, and I hate the major didn't see it, in the video, the kid was not alone. It was five or six kids in this group.
I know.
So I'm just trying to figure out if all the kids were in agreement or did this one guy just do it, you know, randomly and they didn't even see it coming. But they all seemed to be laughing and okay with it. Nobody rendered help to the man that was knocked out. They just kind of went on about their way and were laughing and joking as though it was okay.
Well, I mean, they just need psychiatric help. That's all I'm saying. They don't just need to lock these kids up. They really need to get them in some type of institution and try to find out what's going on in their heads because a lot of these kids are crazy as hell, Carrie. I'm like, I have to really be careful. Now that I saw this video, I'm really going to be on my P's and Q's now, you know, when I'm walking in the streets, you know, because, you know, I like my life, you know, so...
and I agree. You do. You know, it's bad to feel like you're going to be afraid of your own. I mean, people that look like you. Let's just say it like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you see a group of kids coming down the street, and you're afraid. And actually, I experienced this once. I was an avid walker at one time, and I saw a group of kids, and they were middle school kids. But Lord and behold, I really sensed fear when they were approaching, and I actually left the track because the thing is, you don't want to hurt anybody's kids, and you don't want to be hurt by anybody's kids, and they were just a group of bad kids. And so just to avoid the problem, I just left the track. And it should not be that way. It should not be where an adult is afraid of your kids. I mean, that's just the way I feel about that. And the parents have got to take some responsibility. Maybe there needs to be some implemented, but the parents have got to, you know, it's just what it is. Those are your kids. You had them. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, this is somebody you've known since birth. You should know everything that's wrong with them, and you ought to go get them some help. That's just how I see that, y'all. I might be wrong, but that's just how I see that.
Right.
Let's go to, I'm going to leave your phone line open for a minute, Alberta. We're going to go to area code 443-692. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hi, Carrie. How are you? This is Gio.
Hey, Gio. Fine. How are you?
I'm good. I just called to weigh in on the knockout game.
What you think? What were your thoughts on the knockout game?
Well, actually, it has been around for a while, and the one that the gentleman alluded to that. It's been out there for about 2 years, 2 to 3 years or so, but it recently came back to light in September because a man was actually killed by it. It happened just as you described it. A group of teens were walking down the street, and one of them punched a man to knock him out, and he fell back. And if you can visualize this, when he fell back into one of those wrought iron fences with the spike tops, and his neck got lodged between two of the spikes, and he died. It's actually two or three kids right now waiting to go to trial on that. And recently, as early as last week, a customized version of it, if you would, popped up in Crown Heights, New York, where they called it Knockout a Jew. They were, you know, they're going around, and when they encounter a Jewish person, doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman, they were knocking out Jews. So it's out there. And my fear is that not only, you know, is it possible that one of the kids that are actually guilty of doing this is going to wind up getting killed from it. I fear that an innocent kid is going to wind up getting killed for it because, you know, people, after they hear this, naturally, they're going to have their guard up, see any group of young people walking by them, And heaven forbid if one of them just innocently trips and this person has a gun. I mean, I don't think these teenagers realize that they are declaring open field on their own selves by engaging in this.
And, you know, I absolutely agree with that. And that will segue us into Renisha McBride, 19-year-old in Dearborn, Michigan, actually from Detroit. And she was just going to someone's house seeking help after she'd had a car accident, and the man ended up shooting her. And, you know, it took them 13 days to press charges against this man. But in a way, if you take that and you look at the knockout situation, let's just say he was aware of the knockout game. You know, I feel like, don't get me wrong, he was absolutely wrong for killing that young lady. I just don't think there's no way, if her blood alcohol level was 2 to 3 times the legal limit, that she could have posed a threat to him. Don't misunderstand me. But my point is, are people afraid of our young people? That's what I mean. Are people afraid of our young people? Do not misunderstand me. Renisha McBride should still be alive today. I don't think she did anything to get herself killed except for going to the wrong house. But my point is, are our young people, you know, when you're dealing with these that are not so bright, like the ones that are involved in these knockout games, are they setting up the wrong example so that when people of different ethnicities see us, then automatically they become fearful of us? That's what I'm saying. Does anybody agree with that? Oh, y'all, don't get quiet on me.
Well, they were already afraid of us.
Huh? They're what?
They were already afraid of us.
Very true.
Yeah, that guy named Theodore Wafer. I think, yeah, they charged him with second-degree murder. I think they charged him with.
They got three charges on him as of now. They got murder in the second degree. I don't know why it's not in the first degree. But murder in the first degree, which could, you know, you could get up to life in prison for that. They're also charging him with manslaughter, and then they're also charging him with possession of a firearm, I think, when a felony is involved. But my thing is, the reason I think they're putting so many charges on him is just in case it's like a situation like a George Zimmerman, they want something to stick.
That's correct.
Because I don't understand how you can be charged with murder and manslaughter.
He's getting off.
Is what?
Oh. Am I on?
Yeah, you
are.
Make sure
he don't get away.
Okay,
like,
go ahead. I want to say is that this is my opinion on this. The man's getting off, and Renisha should still be alive today. But this is how they're going to spin it. One, they overcharge the case, and they do that on purpose, in my opinion. Also, they're going to use the fact that she was drunk, that she hit a parked car, meaning that hell, she could have hit a family, you know. So they're going to spin that. They're going to spin the fact she got weed in her system. So they're going to spin all of this, and he's probably going to walk. That's just my opinion. But I will say this, though. I will be kind of wary if someone knocking on my door at 4 o'clock in the morning. But I would have called the police, you know, but that would have been me.
But they said he opened the door. Whenever you open the door in the middle of a night to a stranger, that means you ain't scared of him. Because he could have just as easily picked up the phone and dialed 911. So he opened up his main door, but he left the screen door locked, and he shot her through the screen door. So that tells me if she wasn't even able to get to you, she wasn't a threat. And the fact that you opened the door, your main door, that says that basically you meant to do her harm.
And then also you had the weapon, you had the power of the threat in your hand. You know, to control the situation, you see she was unarmed, you know, and so he actually had the power in his hand.
Yes. You know, and I'm trying to still understand, why is it that they keep doing toxicology reports on deceased people when they're the victim and they never seem to do a toxicology report on the shooters? They did this in George Zimmerman's case. They did this in Wafer's case. Why are they not doing toxicology reports on these people, the shooters?
What? I think a lot of it has to do with, like was earlier said, in terms of I think America, white America by and large, is fearful of black individuals and particularly groups of young black individuals. So that's a tactic that they use to basically vilify that individual. They're trying to get people to actually look beyond the actual facts, whether that's of race or the circumstances, and they vilified, because honestly, when they arrested me, the first thing that came up is, were you on any medications? Had you been drinking? Were you on any drugs? Because it right away became apparent. It's not about are you innocent or are you guilty, because we're actually going to put all the facts on the table, all the witnesses and evidence, and try and come to some conclusion. In this case, I believe they knew since the individual had shot her, the quickest thing to dispel what may have been misconduct in that individual's actions is to vilify her, and that's what they did. So most people are going to think in the mind, particularly white America, oh, well, she was drunk. She was probably talking crazy, hostile towards him. But that's not fact. So they're going to do that conceivably in any case that they can against a black defendant, because vilifying them makes it easier to pursue charges or basically not pursue charges.
Well, dead folks can't talk. But we do know that there was no signs of any forced entry to his home. So, again, where was the threat?
But when it goes to court, when it goes to trial, that's where that's going to come in. Because what they're looking at, if basically, in this case, if he does not plead and this goes to trial, he will barely get a slap on the wrist because the young lady has been vilified. I'm telling you, they're not going to look at, I guess, what kind of threat she actually posed to the individual. They're going to look at all that other jargon that was said, which is minutia. It's all gotten them all over here, but it's going to get them off the central focus, which I think is that, at a minimum, it's manslaughter, because the individual did not have to open his door. And, again, it is similar to the George Zimmerman case, but if this is a white male, they're going to quickly dispel and vilify the young lady, unfortunately.
I care.
Well, this is the problem with that, though. When you say that, first of all, I want to know, why did it take them 13 days to charge him? Because we know what would have happened if this had been another racist shot of young white girl in the face. You know, I have a problem with the fact he says my gun automatically, you know, went off. I mean, some kind of way it went off by itself. And you shot it in the face? I mean, really? You had to be pointing at her. I mean, seriously, you'd have to have a gun pointed in order for you to shoot her in the face. And so it's just something's wrong.
You know what it is, Carrie? It's kind of the brother was saying. It's kind of like they always do toxicology report on the dead, and they try to attack that person's character. They try to do the same thing that Jordan Russell Davis out there in Florida, Michael Dunn shot him. But they found out that boy was squeaky clean, and they quickly dropped that. But, like,
was that the other boy who was some helping on somebody's front porch, and the police killed him?
Oh no, that was the one where the white guy shot him who was drinking, talking about the music was too loud in the truck.
But didn't the police just kill somebody because the person
a black
let me
guy?
Think. Yeah, the black he was a black guy.
Man.
He was a football player, wasn't he?
He used to
remember
play back
he
in
went.
The day. I remember him.
Yeah, he went seeking help after a car accident, and he went to somebody's house, and the person called the police, and the police showed up, and just because he was disoriented, he ended up getting killed.
Shot him 10 times or 11 times or something.
It was some ridiculous number. I mean, this is happening too often. I mean, it's really happening too often. I you know, and I know the gun, you know, the gun bills and all that are up before Congress. I'm just of this thinking. I don't think taking away people's guns is the answer. I think penalizing guilty people who kill people for no reason is the answer. And I think if that happens, then we won't have that issue. When people start realizing there's a penalty for using your gun wrongfully, then we won't have that problem. But I think taking away people's guns is not the answer. I mean, but, you know, Renisha McBride, you know, it's very unfortunate. I mean, very unfortunate what happened to this young lady. And it just makes you wonder, how safe are we to go and seek help from somebody today? I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, you wouldn't think that you would end up dead for going to someone's porch. But I guess it's saying that, you know, and I hate to say this, race relations in this country is, to me, at an all-time high. I mean, poor race relations, I guess I should say. And so I don't know if it's safe for a black person to go looking for help or seeking help in a neighborhood where there aren't other black people, let's just say that. I mean, would y'all agree with that, or is that too strong of a statement?
No, I do agree. And part of the problem in terms of the, I think the upswing of black men and women basically being killed or gunned down, murdered, a lot of it has to do is that societal norms has almost essentially accepted whites shooting blacks, and particularly in cases where it is the authorities, without question, without a reasonable investigation. I mean, this young man that you're speaking about, Jonathan Farrell, after that accident, the owner of the home basically called the police and said, you know, there's this black man knocking at my door. He's crazy, yada, yada. So the police show up. This individual has clearly been injured. But then I believe they tasered him initially, and then they shot him. Well, part of that happens is because white police officers understand that they pretty much have carte blanche, and they can use anything, any flimsy excuse to basically shoot someone, particularly a black man, because it's going to basically hold up, and it's tolerated. But show me a case as of recently where you've had a black police officer shoot a white man and is still in that police force or didn't get charges pursued against them. And that is because the white community overwhelmingly will not tolerate that, even if it's justified.
You know, Kufu Cushion and A.J. Houston, did that just happen in Dallas? Remember the videotape where the cop shot the mentally ill man, and he said the man was coming toward him?
But the only thing that got him was there was a bystander with a smartphone that videotaped him. Because they took his story first, and the guy lunged at him with a knife. And then when they actually saw the video that the person had, I think they put it on YouTube. The video, the guy just turned around. He was about 20 feet away from him, and the policeman just shot him. Yeah. So it was just blatant. But what they're doing now is the Dallas police, they've gotten glasses with a camera attached and mics on their lapels so you can actually see and hear what they're saying and what they're doing at the same time. So that's going to be required for all policemen in Dallas.
And Major, to answer your question, that was a black officer who shot a white man.
Yeah. But
and they let him go.
They let him go first.
Yeah, they let him go first. Now they let him go permanently because they fired him.
Yeah, they fired him. I'm saying they let his story go. His story was all right at first until they saw the other video. When they saw the video, it was like, hey, it's not job and there's a problem here. And that's how he got fired. They actually fired him. And they actually, pending an investigation. So since they fired him, that means that there could be some more litigation coming down.
And this guy was mentally ill, and his mother had called police because he had a knife and she was afraid that he was going to harm himself. She didn't expect that they were going to shoot him. She just was trying to get some assistance because he was mental. Y'all, if you just tuned in, you come Center Stage tonight for Hot Topics. We're talking about a little of everything, y'all. We're talking about the Renisha McBride story. We're also talking about the knockout game, the military purging, GridX 2, Obamacare, criminalizing homelessness, FEMA camps, life without parole for nonviolent offenses. And we're also going to cover, if we have time, the fact that I spoke with Lindsey Williams just a couple of days ago, and he told me exactly when we could expect the dollar to collapse. So we're going to try to get to that, y'all, before the end of the hour. If you'd like to chime in on these topics, give us a call at 347-850-8390. Again, if you'd like to chime in on what we're talking about tonight, get on the phone line. Call us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. Okay, y'all, let's talk about Obamacare. Listen, I don't know what to say.
I'm really at
a loss because every day the story just keeps developing and keeps changing. I just don't know about the website. What is it, healthcare.gov? You know, it's still not up and functioning, and it really hasn't enrolled a lot of people. What are y'all thoughts on Obamacare?
Well, let me get mine out of the way first. Let me tell you what I think.
What's your thought?
I want to get mine out of the way so y'all can say whatever y'all want to say. I'm a true believer. I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
Okay.
But I am a true believer that if a group of people that have billion-dollar backers
try and vote it down 44 times and it fails, I don't think whatever site you're working with or whatever site you put up is going to work, because they have enough people and enough money to make the site do whatever they want it to.
Mm.
So other than that,
I agree.
You can say what you want to say. The site's not working, but I'm saying just the other thing I want to add is just like some companies hire hackers because they make security programs.
Yes.
And they hire hackers to make you need security programs. So you tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm just conspiracy theorist with this big story out there.
You know, I agree that the government has enough money to pay somebody to build a website that should be functional. So it almost does seem like a hacker is somewhere doing something behind the scenes that, you know, we're talking about weeks and weeks of this not being able to be up and running properly. It just doesn't seem right. I'll agree with that. I agree with that.
I agree.
Okay. Let me ask y'all this. What is y'all's thoughts on people saying that they're getting cancellation notices from the current health providers about their plans? Why are people being canceled? I thought they said if you had your own insurance, you could keep your own insurance. You could keep your, like if you're on Medicare or Medicaid, you know, or if you're a veteran and you use veteran you know, facilities for your medical services, that those people were secure. And
okay,
I thought,
okay.
I'm sorry? Go ahead. Okay. Yeah. And I thought everybody else was going to be on Obamacare. So why are people being dumped in huge numbers from their current health care plan?
Sure. The way to make things look bad is to have the man in charge look like a liar.
Ooh.
There it is.
I'm saying you have billions of dollars lobbyists down there trying to you know, cancel Obamacare because it's really going to affect their bottom line and the middlemen in this insurance and medical and these doctor scams that they run on people having five or six doctors for one thing. So the best thing to do is to make everything look bad on the legitimate side, although you paint it illegally to look legitimate like it's not working. Because we will fall for anything they tell us.
What does Blue Cross Blue Shield and Aetna and some of the others have to do with your Obamacare? I mean, if it was said that your plan is going to remain your plan if you're happy with it, why would they cancel me?
What's happening? This is my last time. I'm going to let everybody else talk. I'm saying what's happening is like Texas is not accepting the Medicaid and the Medicare addendum that the United States government is trying to pay up. So it's millions of people in Texas that's not going to be covered at all. So for this other little problem, that's just a little problem. The little problem is going to make Obamacare not work at all. So out of that 44 votes, it still could be postponed for a while. That's all they want. So how they go about it, I don't think they've already shown they don't care about the people at all. So why would you expect for them to care about anything else?
Oh, I agree. This is
awesome.
Governor Rick Perry, you know, he has failed to expand Medicaid in Texas for the poor, which would bring about 1.5 million other people into the Medicaid system. So I'm sure these insurance companies and whatnot will cancel those people's policies. They might have done it just to make President Obama look like a liar, you know, to make the theory stick, you know, for as he lied to the country, whatever. You know, they'll do everything they can in order to discredit the president on this bill. You know, we've seen that. We've seen the 44 votes, and we've seen the rollouts, you know, the computerized rollouts messed up. So, you know, there's something going on. You got hackers going on. I seen Obama's guy who's his tech for that healthcare.gov, and he's working on it now, so he don't know if it's going to take another 3 weeks or another 3 months to correct it. But something going on there. I agree with your brother on that. There's something going on.
You know what I think? I'm not the biggest Obama supporter there is, but I'm calling BS on the way these Republicans are doing things. But it's just in my honest opinion, I believe the president should have made laws provisions non-negotiable. You know, the way it's going to be. See, my problem with him, and he wants to negotiate everything. Say it's non-negotiable. These people weren't negotiating. They shut down the government, and I almost messed up my pay, you know, being in the military. You know, so they aren't, yeah, see, they aren't trying to, and see, also, why these Republicans and these so-called liberal Democrats who signing with these Republicans also, because what John Boehner is trying to do is split the Democratic Party. And you know, a lot of times, Democrats, now, I'm neither liberal or conservative. I'm neither one. But he, they trying to split the party. So, like, some of them go along with him, go along with what they're thinking. Because, in my opinion, it just seems like that the president needs to start to take a stand for one and say, we're not negotiating. This is how it's going to be. I'm the president.
But he don't really have to, because the Supreme Court said it.
Yeah,
but they're going against the Supreme Court, which means that they're not about the law. They're about the changing and making a black man look bad. That's my opinion. But I'm saying, and you understand what you're saying, but see, we have this open forum in America where we can say whatever we want to say, but you can't, you have to be politically correct in the process. And you can't say this and you can't say that. So when you have a president that tells somebody exactly what he thinks, he's just an angry black man and not a president.
Well, the problem with that is that either way it goes, they don't like him anyway. They're going to pick apart everything he does anyway.
I know, but
so
I'm saying that's a straight-up
skinny. Right.
But that's a straight-up skinny, because the president has a lot of people under him that should be the voice of him.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they were, but they're siding with so many different people because there's so much money floating around that people are following the money.
Oh, yeah, this
yeah.
is true.
And,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and if you follow the money behind these insurance companies that have shifted their gears and are backing out, thus generating all these cancellation notices, because there's no way the president would have made those statements, regarding we could keep our current health plan unless those insurance companies were on board with him when he said it. Okay, that would have been political genocide for him to stand up in front of the American public, not once, not twice, but three, four, multiple times and say that. They were on board with it. And then now they're shifting the gears and backing out of it. This is the insurance company. And if you follow the money and you follow the political affiliation behind these insurance companies, it'll lead you right to the doorstep of the GOP.
Yeah, but the key to the matter is this one thing, is making sure that everybody that has pre-existing conditions get medical attention. That's what the hospitals don't want. That's what the insurance companies don't want. They've been fighting it ever since they've been insurance companies.
Yep.
So whatever it's going to take to get that done, they're looking at trillions of dollars saved if they can cancel Obamacare. And they're looking at all this money lost if they can't. And
Major
Bond. You think a couple of million people getting insurance matters when they're looking at $1 trillion? You know, they have a body count at the hospital already on the approximation in a year on how many people were lost and how many lawsuits they're going to pay out. They already got the money ready.
Well,
Major Bonds, you were trying to jump in?
Yes, I was trying to jump in to say I'm definitely totally agreeing with everything that's being said. And in addition to that, looking at it from the actual clinician level in the hospital, in the clinic, at the pharmacy, see, and you were right, the law dealing with the Affordable Care Act, it requires, not maybe, sort of, kind of, the law requires policy sold in the individual market by those private companies, they have to cover 10 essential benefits, prescriptions, mental health treatment, maternity care, et cetera, on and on and on. The insurers are not supposed to, based on the law, reject people with medical problems or pre-existing conditions, or charge them higher prices or premium. See, this is what's been going on in the past, and from the clinical perspective. They have basically either turned people away, or they would give you care, but it would be so expensive that you couldn't afford it. Or you may have had reasonable health care on your job, but then there were certain things in the minutia of the premium verbiage that didn't allow you to have certain things, even when you needed it. So what's happening, I believe, too, that there's hackers and that there's a lot of it's not a conspiracy. It's straight-up fact. Anytime there's any kind of change to the way that business has been done and that the insurance companies and the lobbyists and the GOP, they've been able to corner the market, which make trillions of dollars in the healthcare industry. They were kind of on board, but I think what happened is that when those bean counters essentially realized that meant you can't turn people away, that's when they then turn to canceling people. And the people that are canceling, from what I know, and the people who have come to me and said, hey, this has been canceled, I thought I was going to have this under Obamacare, and so forth, has been people with pre-existing conditions and conditions that these insurance companies at the private level do not want to have to cover. And the last thing is that basically the president's plan, the coverage that the president has laid out, in most cases, it's better insurance for middle income or poor folks anyway.
Yep.
It's not perfect, but it's better. And I'm telling you, these insurance companies, when it's like coming into a car dealership and you've been selling that car for $20,000 plus a percentage increase every year. Now someone comes in and says, hey, well, you know what? That car only cost you $5,000. Why have you been selling it for $15,000 over sticker? And nobody has really been able to monitor what you're doing. Now that they can, and they're seeing that you're charging $5 for a pill that doesn't even cost 55 cents to produce, they're busting the market up.
And see, I'm going to ask this last thing on Obamacare, and I'm going to move on. Obamacare was created, if y'all remember, for Romney by the insurance companies. So whatever happens, ultimately the insurance company knows all the ins and outs about this whole bill. And so anything that's probably going wrong, they got a hand in it somewhere. I mean, just going to put that out there. But we're going to move on. Listen, if you just tune in, you come center stage tonight for Hot Topics. We're talking about a little of everything tonight, y'all. We're talking about criminalizing homelessness and the knockout game, Obamacare, the military doing a purge. We're talking about the Renisha McBride shooting, Grid X, life without parole for nonviolent offenses, and FEMA camps. We're also going to talk about the NSA eavesdropping on your phone calls. And I also had a conversation with Lindsey Williams since he's been on the show, and he told me exactly when the dollar was going to collapse. So, you know, we're going to try to get to that before the show ends tonight. So, listen, y'all, moving on. The military is purging. Understand that 9 senior commanding generals have been fired by this administration. You know, I know A.J. Houston is an ex-military person, and we know Major's a military person. I don't know if Khufu Fukush has been in the military, but y'all, that I haven't been in the military, but I think that's like a lot. I don't know. I mean, a lot of top rank to be fired. Does that stick out a little bit? I mean, is that odd?
But Carrie, one thing is odd, but one thing you have to bundle with that fine.
Mm-hmm.
Is look at all the rape cases that weren't investigated from overseas and all these places that these people were over, that they actually knew about, that the people went to them and brought the case up, and they just dismissed the case in their ranks. So there's a lot of other things involved in that, I'm saying. And there's so much prejudice in the military, directly and indirectly, that you can't believe what these white generals would do and say to not just the sergeants and first and second lieutenants, the captains and majors, because you have a lot of black people trying to do what's right in the military, and you have such unbiased people as far as the colonels and upper echelon. It's almost like, I'm saying, it's like corporate America.
I believe that.
Especially when most of the generals and everybody's white, and now you see them leaving and getting fired, and there's a problem. But when you see all the black people leaving and getting fired, it's just because we was the last hired.
I believe that. And the thing is, a lot of times too, and you see this in all segments of in walks of life, when people have been in a position for a really long time, they become almost stale. Like, you know, they feel like, you know, they can't accept change. Let's just say that. And so I think could some of that be the case, that, you know, this is a new administration, maybe they don't like or agree with everything the way that it's being done, and so maybe they're not following his orders. Like, he's the commander-in-chief. Maybe they think their title supersedes his when they shouldn't. It should be always respecting the office in which he holds, even if you don't agree with the way he's running it. Am I not right on that?
Yeah, the military is a microcosm of the good old boy system when it comes to that upper echelon.
Yeah.
So when you destroy the good old boy system, everybody thinks that you're wrong.
I can believe that. I absolutely can believe that. And I just wondered if that was some of it, where, you know, it's just like, you know, you got all this old thinking, and they're just not ready to accept, you know, that, you know, we're not doing it that way anymore. We're going to do it this way. And so I can see sometimes where they may not follow a direct command that maybe have been given by the administration. I don't know. I'm just, you know, I just thought 9 was a high number, and that maybe that was.
And my last comment that I'll let everybody talk. See, when you look at Benghazi, the Republicans took away so much money for relief and for protection and security around the world that Benghazi was a skeleton crew. So when it happened to a skeleton crew, and they didn't have any time to retaliate or get anybody else there. So that's what they're not addressing. But then you had generals that was on the side of the Republicans saying, yeah, we didn't get this order. So he's saying, if y'all won't back me to what actually happened, y'all don't need to be in the position y'all in. So there's a whole lot of factors in the hiring and firing of all these people. And it's not like they would just let go because I just didn't like them. So
I believe that. Khufu, Major, y'all want to weigh in before we move on?
Yes, at the end of it. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, you know, my thing, you know, not to be prejudiced or anything, but, you know, the white male, he's been raping since slavery. And so anytime he's been entrusted with law and order, even around the world, he's always violated people's trust. So it doesn't surprise me if they're raping in the military. Okay, raping, every time you go across, you know, you go across the sea, they always, if there's some colored people involved, you know there's always going to be a few white fellas going to be doing some raping and unlawful killing. You know, so we have a lot of, they've always done it. So it just doesn't filter down back home.
That makes sense. Major?
What I was going to say is that I don't think 9 is too high of a number. And the reason is that in the military, I know it's been said, there's a lot of leaders and a lot of individuals that hide behind creativity or discretion when it's really misconduct. It should be even a higher code or a higher standard in the military than the civilian community, simply because of the nature of your job and what you do, and that you have to be beyond reproach. But when you cross that line and you make that decision to cross that line, whether it's an unlawful order or whether getting involved with a soldier that you shouldn't be, or with the misusing your government credit card, these things can't be taken lightly. And what has happened is that a lot of these senior leaders have been able, because of the good old boy system, they've been able to get over. And then a lot of soldiers who want to bring certain things to the command's attention, then they get targeted for whistleblowing and so forth. And a lot of things don't get resolved in the manner that they should be. You know, there's an oath that you take that is with being a soldier in terms of honoring the Army ethos and the values. But when you violate those, to me, it's not complex. But what has happened is that the more rank you have or the more influence you have, the harder it is for people to come forward. And in a lot of cases, even when an allegation is made and facts are made, a lot of times soldiers are tried, there's individuals that try to talk soldiers out of certain things. When I think as soon as misconduct happens and that can be resolved, that's the time to do it. Not 2, 3, 4 years down the road where this individual has wreaked havoc. Then you're going to have a lot of problems. I think the president, and I will give him big kudos for at least attempting to try to do something that a lot of presidents knew about but didn't do anything.
And I agree. And my only thing, and I'm going to move on because we got a lot of ground to catch up on. But does this hurt morale when, you know, your soldiers under you see, you know, rank like this being fired?
Oh, yes, it does. Because
not all the time.
They know what's going on. It affects morale. And, see, people don't connect the dots. It can affect the morale to a certain degree that soldiers want to harm others, and soldiers in a lot of cases want to harm themselves because of this. And because of the grief and the stress and the wear and tear that's on them because they have to go to work every day and they have to deal with this. And unfortunately, suicide in the military is at an all-time high. And a lot of it is because of leadership.
Mm. I agree with that, but I don't think the firing of generals actually hurt morale because a lot of times your chain of command determines the way your unit is, the conduct and behavior of your unit. So if you have bad chain of command, you have a lot of people that's not participating and not willing, not giving their all and not gung-ho. Basically, you know, that's where you're not gung-ho about what's going on because they say, well, I can take this to my chain of command, and it's just squashed at the sergeant level, at the first lieutenant level, or not even reaching my first sergeant because they know nothing's going to be done. But when you change the command around, everybody come in and say, we got a new commander. So things are going to be different, just like everybody was gung-ho when President Obama ran the first time talking about change. And now you're seeing change and people don't like it.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
That is so true.
You're right. I mean, the morale is when things don't happen and when the soldier does not feel comfortable coming to their command and being able to voice some things or bring some things to the command's attention. But when they have a little bit more liberality to do that, and they at least have the understanding or the belief that something will be done or will at least be investigated and looked at, then the morale goes up. But when they feel that what has happened to them or what they bring to the command's attention is not going to be addressed, yeah, that does hurt morale.
Because the last 10 years being in Iraq and Afghanistan, there's been thousands of rape cases by female soldiers that were taken to commanders and first sergeants and generals that were hushed and squashed and just put in the file and nothing done. So there's a whole lot of things under the cover that hadn't been discussed, that's not in the media, that's not brought out yet, that has to be addressed eventually.
Yeah.
And you can't
most of these ranking officials are, you know, in the high echelon, they are white males, and they have a culture of violence and rape. You know, just part of their culture, so they're going to naturally cover it up. They always have. And so it doesn't surprise me when they start firing those top generals or whatnot, and then, you know, they hire another one, and he's corrupt too. You know, that's the way they are.
And the other thing is, look at the Republicans on how they want to govern a woman's body. All the things they want to be in command of, even though they have no physical, no doctorate degree in anything, and no real knowledge on how a woman's body operates. But they want to probe, they want to stop you getting an abortion, they don't want you to get birth control, they don't want you to get mammograms, they don't want you to get all these things that are necessary for your daily health and needs. And you think that these other people with the same ideology and the same political, connection is going to care about the soldiers underneath them?
The Republicans, because we all know that they're hypocrites because, you know, on one end they preach that they're not for government intrusion to people's personal lives. And then they turn around and they try to tell the women and institute laws on how they should, deal with abortion, even instances of rape and incest and these type of things here. So, you know, that just doesn't line up with what their government thing about not having so much government intrusion to people's personal private lives.
If you just tuned in, you've come center stage for the topic, Hot Topics. We're talking about a little of everything, y'all. We're talking about criminalizing knockout game, Obamacare, military purging top-ranking officers. We're talking about the Renisha McBride shooting, FEMA camps, NSA eavesdropping, and GridX, too. So we're going to try to get to all of that by the end of the hour. If you'd like to chime in on tonight's topics, call us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. Okay, y'all, we're going to talk about criminalizing homelessness. Now, first of all, the first thing that comes to mind before I even you know, tell y'all what this is about, is the Bible says that the poor will be with you always. And that is always forever before me. You know, I never, ever consider myself better than another person because their situation may be worse than mine. And this next story, it just reeks of just some people who just don't know how quickly life can change. In Columbia, South Carolina, they have decided basically right now to rescind a controversial decision to criminalize homelessness. After basically facing major backlash from the police department, city workers, and advocates, these, I call them crazy people on the city council in Columbia, South Carolina, had decided basically that, you know, I guess the homeless population in South Carolina was becoming an eyesore. So they took it upon themselves to have a vote on it, and the vote was unanimous that if you were homeless, in panhandling in Columbia, South Carolina, you had two options. You could either be arrested or you could be sent to a FEMA camp, and basically your movement would be restricted. That's Columbia, South Carolina, y'all, right here in the U.S. of A. I mean, what are y'all thoughts on that? I was just taken back by that. I just couldn't believe, you know, this could be happening.
Well, Carrie, you have to understand, in all these, like, South Carolina has a lot of political things going on and a lot of other things. Because when I was in Charlotte, they made this area for the homeless people when the president, you know, when I think the Democratic National Convention was there. Mm-hmm. Weeks before, they had police everywhere. They were giving tickets for jaywalking, and it was just practice to keep the streets, you know, orderly and to get the homeless out. And they corralled them up and took them somewhere. I don't know where they took them, but they moved them. But that's a problem around everywhere. But you're going to have homelessness. Everybody's a two checks away, a month of payments away from being homeless.
Yeah. And, you know, it's amazing to me that, again, you know, if one person had said this, I'd go, okay, there's one fool in the bunch. But if you got a whole city council and they all unanimously agree on something this cruel, something's wrong. I mean, they need to vote them all out the next election and start all over, because it's amazing how there's this push now for people to do better when the economy is failing. I mean, it's like an oxymoron. How can you say I'm going to take everything from you when there's nothing for you to go to? There's nothing to support you right now. And so for these people to be homeless and basically the only option is either jail or to go to a FEMA camp, something's wrong with the world we're living in. I mean, Khufu, Major Bonds, y'all agree with that?
Yeah, both of those are, you might say, you know, they're saying that either way you're going to prison, they're going to arrest you. I'll put you in FEMA where we got to control your movements and whatnot, so you vote. Basically, either way, you're going to prison. So I agree with you. That's terrible right here in America. You know, it's unbelievable. But, you know, with minimum wage still being where it's at, you know, of course, you know, Elizabeth Warren, you all heard of Elizabeth Warren, the senator, I think she's from Wisconsin somewhere. You know, she was talking about the minimum wage in America, if had Americans been getting their rightful pay since 1960, with the big corporations steady growing and whatnot in America since 1960, that the proper minimum wage would be supposed to be $22 an hour. Of course, you know, the McDonald's workers and everybody is fighting for $15 an hour right now and doing all these strikes and whatnot. And so, but, you know, they're making America poor and poor because you have this minimum wage at, what, $7.25 an hour, then they take taxes from that, so you're not even getting $7.25. And so, I don't know what they expect for the people to do, you know. Even two people making $7.25 an hour couldn't make it, you know. And they were talking about that on MSNBC when they had a black couple there who was upstate working in Washington, D.C. They're working at McDonald's. The guy, he used to work and make $17 an hour on a labor job. And that job ended and whatnot, so he had to go working at McDonald's. And his wife worked at McDonald's, but they were living with her parents because of the fact they had a couple of kids, and each one of them was, you know, the parents, the mother and father, was making $7.25 an hour, and they still couldn't make it.
You know, and this is surreal to me because yesterday I went to someone's home, and And I sat there for about 30 minutes, and I really didn't even notice I was cold. And then I began to notice that my hands were, like, icy. And I noticed there was a space heater, but I didn't really pay it any attention. And the person said to me that I haven't had gas in this house in years. I simply can't afford it. And, you know, I was just, like, shocked. I was like, wow, you know, I mean, no gas. You know, it gets cold where we live, y'all. And this person said, you know, I haven't had gas in years. So there's a whole lot of people struggling. I mean, really struggling. And so for Columbia, South Carolina to take a stance like this, you know, I say shame on them. I say, you know, it's time for them to vote out this group of folks and to put in some new folks. I mean, seriously, it's just a FEMA camp. I mean, really, where your movement is restricted, really, that it's out in some boondocky place, you know, where you can't easily get back to town, that type of thing. I think that's just, that reeks of some more going on.
But one thing you have to take note of is that for them to vote unanimously on one issue, you have to see how many other issues that they have to agree on to vote unanimously on that issue, too.
Okay.
Well,
there are more things on the docket than that.
Okay, I'm sorry, say what, Major Bond?
No, go ahead. You can finish. I'm sorry.
What'd you say, AJ?
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Was it me, or are you talking about AJ? AJ, you were saying what?
I was saying there was more things on the docket than that, so there had to be some issues that they didn't agree on, and they wanted to vote unanimously on one thing, so that was probably the thing they chose, and I can't say why they chose it, but I'm quite sure that all of them didn't agree with it, but they agreed with it in voting because of some other things that they were willing to sacrifice or give up.
You might be right. Major Bond.
Well, and I was also going to say, you know what, it's very interesting in terms of how certain things reinvent themselves and come back in another form in terms of the government trying to present it. Like King Solomon said, vanity of the vanity, there's nothing new under the sun.
Mm.
Back post-slavery, the way that they started to get the prison industrial complex and in a sense, control of poor individuals, particularly poor black individuals, post-slave that were now free slaves, is a technique or a system called peonage, basically involuntary servitude. A lot of these things, and it also has to do with the homelessness of it, the aspect in terms of a lot of complaints and people basically not wanting to not only see the poor, but not wanting to do what the Bible says, and that's basically, yeah, you always have the poor with you, but that's like a ding, 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 ding. That means that you need to be trying to do all that you can to resolve those problems of the homeless, to try and make them work with individuals and with care and compassion to be productive citizens. But the FEMA camp, to me, is peonage, because basically what you're doing is that as you do that and expand these camps, that means that ultimately you're going to there's benefactors out of this. There's money that's going to be made. Everything from, it's like a mini mini federal prison. And then the other thing about that is that the way and the shift that they're doing. I remember there was a gentleman Anthony I think Simaris.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the retired individual who was basically just in the park, not bothering anybody, had been doing it for years, 25 years, cutting, being a compassionate human being. And the city in Hartford, Connecticut, was all over this 82-year-old barber for doing something for the poor. So it's a mentality that people are disposable. It's a mentality that the homeless are to be discarded or out of mind, out of sight, out of mind. And I think it's a shame that they're trying to develop these camps when they should be developing clinics and different things that may help the homeless that are mentally ill or the homeless that have fallen on hard times. Any of us could be homeless. I mean, we're just, you know, we're a step away. a series of things could happen in anyone's life that could create them being in a homeless situation. So I think that it's an abomination. It's a very tragedy. But again, this is something that we the people have to fight, because the FEMA camps, I think, is barbaric, and it's definitely not the answer.
Listen, and I agree. And speaking of FEMA camps, y'all, there are over 800 prison camps in the U.S., 800, all fully operational and ready to receive prisoners, y'all. They are all staff and even surrounded by full-time guards. Now, if anybody's in denial, why would there be 800 prison camps already manned, guarded, and fully operational if there wasn't something in store for us? I mean, I'm just saying there's something going on with that. These camps are all operated by FEMA. Should martial law need to be implemented in the U.S.? All would take is a presidential signature and a proclamation and the attorney general's signature on a warrant to which a list of names are attached. So basically, you know, God forbid my name is on that list, but, you know, they take your name off this list, and, you know, then they come find you, and then off to a FEMA camp you go. Now, what is the criteria for your name being on that list? I'd love to know. But that's what I understand FEMA camps are going to be all about. But, y'all, that's scary to me. I'm just saying, because 800 camps is a whole lot of camps, and they're all over the U.S. They aren't just, you know, one place. I mean, I could have gone alphabetically, but I only just picked a few. Alabama has one in Opelika. Alaska has one in the wilderness near Anchorage. Arizona has one at Fort Huachuca. Arkansas has one at Fort Chaffee. California, Vandenberg Air Force Base. Colorado at Trinidad. Florida at Avon Park. Georgia at Fort Benning. Hawaii at Halawa Heights area. Idaho has one in the Minidoka area, Jerome County. Illinois has one in Marseilles, and Indiana has one in Indianapolis, Marion County. Y'all, they're everywhere. I mean, they're everywhere. Why would they need FEMA camps spread out all over the U.S.? And I understand that some of these locations are so remote that you can only get there by rail or by plane. So that means,
well,
one.
Illinois has over 13 FEMA camps, and I talked to some people about this. Now, the FEMA camps were not even originally designed for that.
Really?
A lot of these camps were designed because there was a governmental consensus that they thought that the Mexican-U.S. border was going to be so quickly overloaded in terms of a mass exodus of illegal aliens that they needed to establish at least a few of these to be centers that they would house the illegal aliens, illegal immigrants, until such time they could be processed, so forth, and sent back. But if you look at this, and if that means there's over 800, there can't be that much of a mass exodus into the U.S. So there was a secondary purpose for these camps. And like you said, like a police state, like martial law, it is too easy for them to sign into law by the president, if this individual violates this, arrest them and put them in the camp. So that also means freedom of speech. That also means that the government is not going to take too lightly if you're talking against something that they're doing. So there's a bigger, I think, scenario to this in terms of that presidential executive order. And then that also means that could be beneficial for someone running, making a White House run to get in that seat and possibly sign that executive order.
AJ Houston, Kufu Kush.
No, well, I'm saying I really think that they probably have a lot of different issues and a lot of different things that they're made for. And like you said, you know, because if you remember, what, 3 years ago when they first started talking about this amnesty program,
where everybody has to turn themselves in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they work on you staying here, which meant that everybody wasn't going to stay. You know, so there was some other things in process to why they were created. Now, why so many were created after that, I have no clue, but everybody has to have a good idea or some portion of what they're saying is the truth about why it is so.
But isn't there some FEMA camps already that have people in them right now?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, do you know that? I mean, there are like 12 or 13 different executive, basically known but little known, orders to the general public, and you can Google it. I mean, basically, an executive order can almost seize or arrest or create a police state, period. It doesn't even have to be good justification. And the thing is that some of these FEMA camps that they're having now, like I said, there's a larger and a disproportionate that a lot of poor individuals are going to end up in these camps, not regular federal prisons.
Yeah.
Because and actually, the FEMA camps, that's not even including, remember what I said, that the reason that they were initially designed. But when they do have illegal immigrants, illegal aliens that come across, the FEMA camps is not where they house most of them in the first place. They have detention centers for those. They're not even the FEMA camps. And they were supposed to be originally erected for that purpose.
It's so much we don't understand and we don't know. And, you know, and my question would be, if there's some FEMA camp already, let's just say, populated already, who are the people that are in there and what are they in there for? Okay, yeah. just let that simmer.
They're probably there for lewdness, like you, what vagrantness, you know, being a vagabond in the land.
Some jail wasn't good enough.
You know what? That's actually what it is, because when you think about homeless, when you think about individuals that are panhandling, it's basically vagrancy. That is the reason that they were picking up post-slavery black men. For vagrancy, that law is still on the book. Federal law, in terms not loitering, vagrant. Basically,
I thought if you were like in a city and you did that, don't they take you to jail, not to a FEMA camp?
No. Initially, in the cities, most of what they've done is that the jail issue is not the first thing they do. They say there's a series of fines. Like it could be $60 or $70 every time they catch you panhandling, or $80 if you walk up to a car panhandling. Now, it leads to that. Then guess what happens after you get fined? You can't pay because now you're panhandling. Then you end up in jail. But you probably don't end up because they have the.
It's like in Dallas, you know, we see where I was at Walmart earlier.
They're going to send you to a FEMA camp.
And we had a white fella out there with a sign, and his child on the ground, his wife right there. And they were talking about they was homeless and they had a kid to feed and they was, you know, seeking money. And now I seen, before I came here, I seen, you know, another Walmart in Paris where we had a lady. She had two kids sitting on the bench over there, and she had a sign and saying she was homeless and they was hungry and this type of stuff. And that's vagrancy, homelessness right there, you know. But several of us stopped and gave us some money, but they were considered that as one of the people who are going to be in a FEMA program.
That is crazy. I'm sorry, that's just crazy. I mean, wow, when did we become so, I don't know, full of ourselves that we look down on the homeless in this way, that we just want them out of sight, out of mind, that they're just the undesirables? I just find that attitude to be very arrogant, very haughty. And we know what the Bible says about a haughty spirit, but that's just where that seems to be going. I mean, how dare you? I mean, with an economy that's collapsing as we speak, it's just crazy. Well, y'all, that segues me into, because we got to move on, y'all. We are down to our last 30 minutes of the show. I told y'all I had a conversation with Lindsey Williams since our last show with him. And Lindsey Williams passed on this information to me, and he said that, you know, he didn't have a problem with me sharing it with you all. Lindsey Williams told me that the dollar will collapse within the next 3 months. the dollar will collapse within the next 3 months, and it will be revalued at basically 30% less than what it is today. Let's just say that. So food for thought, you know, and you all can take it and believe it or do whatever you choose to do with that. But he suggested that people, you know, who have a lot that they're worried about to maybe put it in gold, because when all the dust settles, you know, that the gold will basically hold its value better than anything else, because anything that's paper is not worth the paper that it's written on. Guys, what do y'all think of that? Do y'all think he's right, or do you think
I think he's right on the money, and I also think that's why JFK was assassinated. Money has to be, basically, money has to have some collateral. The paper itself is traced back to something, and for the longest time, the U.S. Treasury used silver notes, but now it's not. The transition is going to the gold. So the gold is essentially what the money is valued towards. So if you just continue to print money, which is what the Treasury does in a lot of cases, it will devalue the dollar, because that is it's related to what gold is being, the money is being printed off of. So since they no longer use the silver bonds and they're going to gold, you're going to have the gold for the money to be worth something. So you print more money, and you don't also infuse gold into the Treasury in terms of the currency, the dollar does go down. I don't necessarily know if in the next 90 days that the dollar will devalue, but the dollar is steadily devaluing day by day because of that fact, and because the government does not own its own treasury. The Federal Reserve Bank is a group of 12 banks that the government does not even have full oversight on. It's private banks.
I agree 100%. Kufu Kush, AJ Houston. Kufu Kush? Where are y'all going tonight? Where are y'all at? Are y'all watching the basketball game on here? What are y'all doing?
I'm just the Major Bond on that. I'm collecting my thoughts on that. Major Bond, he's doing a good job on that topic.
Well, see, I mean, keep this in mind. Ultimately, if I'm going to work and I'm making $500 a week, that's good. But guess what? The folks who write the laws, who control the money, also know that they can print more money so people can think they have more money in their pocket. And then you can work another part-time job, you can work overtime, and make a whole lot of money. But guess what happens when the system or Wall Street collapses? What do they defer back to? Gold. So who won't lose the most is the people who have the most gold. Not, you can have $500,000 at home under your bed, but don't have any gold buoyancy to back that up, and guess what? You're going to have about $500.
And you see a lot of companies trying to buy out gold.
It will collapse.
Okay.
You know, you see a lot of companies and people trying to buy gold, buy broken gold chains, anything. They trying to handle some gold and whatnot. And, that's part of International Monetary Funds. They have a lady who's over that, and she speaks sometime here in America. And every now and then I get a chance to see her on our C-SPAN. Very sharp lady, white lady. And she breaks down the international, you know, money system, whatnot, how money is working at that time here in Europe and the euro dollars, and how it's going, how it's affecting Asia or Africa and this type of stuff. And she does a real good job all the time. And so I try to catch her anytime I can, just keep up on how that dollar is going to switch or devalue itself or whatever. You know, because, you know, one time they had what the top still, Greece and Europe, that was doing pretty bad with the dollar, the euro dollar.
And I understand, and let me be clear, it's not going to be just the dollar. It's going to be across the world. The currencies are just going to collapse, which we know when that happens, we're talking about the New World Order, because when they come back, you know, we're going to be looking at one type of currency more than likely. You know, if they all collapse at the same time, that's pretty much what's going to happen. AJ Houston, you're back on. AJ, we dropped you off the line some kind of way.
I was trying to say a couple of things a minute ago when you asked me, because you know, when you have a country that owes another country over $2.1 trillion,
yeah,
the way to
minimize your debt is to devalue your currency.
Wow.
And then, you know, it's just like companies that call you and say, okay, you owe us $13,000, but we'll accept $2,800.97.
Which is what a lot of the credit card companies are doing. You know, you owe them $10,000.
Exactly.
If you just give me $1,200, we'll call it a day. So, yeah, I understand that.
But I'm saying as far as the dollar devaluing, I think the problem is when you have, I guess you'd have to go back to see the last election when corporations became people and they could donate any amount of money under any name or anonymously that they wanted. And they were donating hundreds of millions of dollars to campaign funds, which meant that the money really didn't mean anything to them. So why should they let the money mean anything to us?
That makes perfectly good sense. Okay, y'all, we're down to our last 25 minutes in the show. Y'all, listen, the biggest story of the night was, you know, and I shouldn't say the biggest, but one of the biggest that shocked me the most was that people are getting life without parole for nonviolent offenses. I couldn't believe that. And they said that basically a shocking new study by the American Civil Liberties Union has found that more than 3,200 people nationwide are serving lifetime terms without parole for nonviolent offenses. About 80% are behind bars for drug-related convictions. 65% are African-Americans. 18% are white, and 16% are Latino. Evidence of what the ACLU calls extreme racial disparities. The crimes that led to life sentences included stealing gas from a truck, shoplifting, possession of a crack pipe, facilitating a $10 sale of marijuana, and attempting to cash a stolen check. Now, yo, something's wrong. That is the prison industrial complex if I ever heard. That's crazy. I mean, why would you agree to feed somebody and house someone for life for those type of offenses?
You have thousands of examples.
You have what?
Because when they first started doing it, the claim was, I want to make an example out of you.
Mm.
I say, so evidently you have thousands of examples that they just forgot they were making examples out of people and started making it a sentence.
But 3,200 people.
I'm not trying to be funny, but I'm saying seriously because I've seen the mandatory sentences that they're giving people for menial crimes. And it was like, I want to make an example out of you so nobody else would come in my court with this thing.
But you're agreeing to feed somebody and house somebody for life? For stupid stuff? I mean, I'm not saying, you know, if you commit a crime, you know, surely you should pay for your crime. I get that part. But, I mean, life sentences without parole, that's just nonsense. I mean, the system is so broken, it needs to be fixed. I mean, I'm sorry, if a judge sits on a bench and throws a book at somebody like this, this is just wrong.
Well, after the Trayvon case, if you remember, President Obama and the Chief Justice got up and said what had happened to them. So this is not something that's not being looked at or addressed. It's just hard addressing it when you have a different party, you know, trying to destroy everything else that's been created so far in the last five, six years. It's on
Major
the list.
Major buzz, Kufu Kush.
The nonviolent crimes that are dealing with the minor, the drug offenses, they were not of a violent nature. I had mentioned previously, most police departments, I would probably say 50 to 60% of the makeup is with the drug teams and the specialty teams that deal with drug crime. So therefore, it's kind of like you just keep greasing the wheel. And you're right, a lot of these cases were designed because they wanted to make an example. But disproportionately, they're sentencing more minorities for these minor or nonviolent crimes to longer years in prison. I mean, think about it. I mean, now, when I was arrested in 2008 wrongfully, of the alleged a violent crime, I mean, they were trying to send me to jail for 28. Can you imagine someone who had a crack pipe and they're trying to give them life?
Mm. I just think it's crazy. Khufu.
Yeah, my thought on that would be, you know, that they would want to disenfranchise the African American. First thing, you know, further disenfranchise since we're 65% part of that complex. And also, they will further kill our vote. You know, of course, they're trying to, you know, get rid of the vote. And also eliminate the threat of genetic annihilation, whether it's a black male or black female interbreeding with their kind, especially the black male, you know, who's taking on a lot of white females that are sexual partners and whatnot. And so that's a big thing in America. You know, the white is a minority here in America and on the world scene. And so that's becoming a big threat because right now, you know, they're losing votes because everybody's beginning to be color who are voting in favor of a Democrat or someone that looks like them. And so, you know, that's why we got all this gerrymandering in the districts and these new voting rights laws come in that Scalelli, Judge Scalelli, our Supreme Court justice, he's with. You know, they're arguing right now about, well, now that they changed the filibuster rule, GOP is stating that, well, if you do that, that's fine because when we get us a Republican there, we're going to get us another Scalelli, you know, this type of stuff there. So someone who's going to further try to disenfranchise Hispanics, blacks, Asians, those who make it the majority to be able to keep the white in a non-majority position. Because he really, the whites are in a majority for as, you know, when they're gerrymandering, you know, we actually win the vote. You know, the people of color actually win the vote, but the elector goes to the white male, you know, because it's geared toward their districts and stuff. And so they're still standing in the majority in a sense. And so they have to do something to further disenfranchise that. And so that
reminds me of the Scott sisters, and they've done the show before. The Scott sisters were given double life sentences for a crime that netted less than $30. They didn't even rob anybody. They were just associated some kind of way with the people who allegedly did the robbery. Nobody was hurt. Nobody was killed. And they got double life sentences. And thank God, due to the push of underground radio, those ladies, those sisters are out of jail today. But I mean, you know, does it take a movement for all these people just for them to get out of jail? It's just, it's crazy. But that was just like, you know, just mind-blowing to me. But that's life without parole for nonviolent offenses right here in the USA. 3,200 people currently serving life without parole.
Well, see, you have to understand, these people here believe that each vote counts. And, it, you know, counts. And that's why they are seeking to kill each vote. And each life counts who they put in that system at 32. They, you know, what you said, it was 65% African Americans. Everybody counts. So, you know, they want to, you know, criminalize each one of us. It doesn't matter from the youngest to the oldest. You know, it counts. If they're allowed to vote, whatnot, and they're still inbreeding, all this type of stuff here, they count. And so they're the unseen hand out there. That's always working against us.
Very true. And you know, y'all, listen, if you just, I'm sorry, say what, AJ?
No, I was going to say, when you look at the areas that these people were sentenced in, look and see how long the judge had been in the chair, because some judges have had their chairs for almost their whole life.
That is true, and that is a significant problem. And just to piggyback on that, the other problem then becomes that people don't understand that in a lot of cases in the black community, gossiping, talking about it at church, at the barbershop, that's a good thing to get the open dialogue. But at the end of the day, if laws are not upheld and overturned because people are pushing for it and that people have the ability to have access to uniting, getting attorneys to fight that on the state and the federal level, very little gets done. I'm fighting a law that's dealing with police, and just as a quick sidebar, police misconduct. Now, I could have just said, well, you know, I was wrongfully arrested. I'm suing the city for damages. I'm $300,000-$400,000 in the red and so forth. But I quickly realized that tomorrow they're going to do the same thing to somebody else. Why? Because they made the laws dealing with probable cause so low that almost any police officer can arrest you just because you're not chewing your gum the right way, like a police state. So as these laws in terms of three strikes or four strikes that you're out, we can't tolerate it. We have to find out, how do we dissect this? What do we have to do legally? How much money do we have to raise? Because a lot of these judges that have been on the bench too long and have too much discretion and are sending nonviolent offenders to prison for life, we got to hit them laws, and we got to make some noise about it, because at the end of the day, they're going to do the same thing. It's like the same conduct of business. They're going to do the same thing tomorrow. So addressing these laws and knowing which laws that they're pulling from, and then being able to do something to get these laws changed.
Yeah, and piggybacking on what you just said, see, a lot of times it's actually in the whole sheet that we're voting on as Article 333-9. They don't say what it is, so you're not voting on it, but if you don't vote on it, that means somebody's voting on it, it's going to pass anyway.
Yeah. That's true. You're absolutely right.
You know, that's why Eric Holden them sent out, last month? They sent out to all attorney generals in the United States to do away with mandatory minimums, you know, because of, you know, these nonviolent offenders getting these life sentences and over sentences and everything else. And so hopefully they'll do away with that mandatory minimums. But, you know, of course, you know, he did send a memo out, though, last month. I do believe it was on MSNBC where I saw it. And whether or not they're on it, I don't know, but they're supposed to. It would maybe start helping us out anyway.
Okay, y'all, we're down to under our last 14 minutes of the show, and we got two topics we really still want to hit on. Y'all, NSA, your National Security Agency, y'all, I don't know how to put this. They have acknowledged in a new classified briefing that they have been eavesdropping on your phone calls. But what they say is they're not listening to the content of the conversation. All they're doing is that what numbers you're talking to and the duration of the call. Now, does anybody really believe that?
But they've always been listening to our conversations. They just got caught.
They what? They got caught. It's true.
I say they've always been listening. I said for the last 9 years, I've been joking with friends of mine because, you know, I'm a poet. I perform all over the nation. I have pieces that I've seen activity on my accounts that don't look right. And I dropped calls. I used to always play like, oh, that's Homeland Security listening on my phone. And they was laughing. But I said, they've always been listening on our calls. They just got caught.
Yeah.
Well, if you notice, you know, your phone, sometimes you talk on the cell phone, the speaker, it's like it goes loud. You know, even though you don't have a speaker on, it kind of gets like you have a speaker on or some type of tone. I think it's when they listen to it also.
Are you hear the echo? You hear the echo on your phone while you're talking?
Correct. Yeah, that echo sounds like it's someone listening in or something going on there.
No, y'all, I got it better than that. I've had the click. I mean, and the click, 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 click. I mean, so I know they do it. I don't even have to guess on this one. It's just amazing to me that at first they denied it, and then they later came out and said, hey, but, you know, we're not listening to the content. We're just looking at what numbers you're calling, and we're just looking at the duration of the call. Why would anybody believe that doesn't even make sense? You know, first of all, if we're not terrorists, which is, I thought, you know, who they're supposed to be following. Yes,
Carrie, you believe that the website is not working.
It's
so
just,
what they said makes it, what they say makes just as much sense as that.
Yes.
Well, you know, and that's an interesting, it's an interesting point, because part of the reason that the NSA seemed to jump out of their skin and come forward and say, yeah, well, we were kind of doing this, but we really were doing that. And, mm-hmm. I mean, we remember back, of those 200,000 classified documents that
WikiLeaks,
that former NSA Edward Snowden, had information and content in there about them actually spying on people's phone calls. So it has the thing is that the NSA, the director, Alexander, he's coming forward and trying to beat the rush, because he knows that some of those documents, and a lot of them, it outlined what the NSA was doing, and not that they were just listening to what kind of calls and not really the content and so forth. You know, that's the furthest thing from the truth. You don't tap a line. You don't get into somebody's personal conversations because you're just trying to track the phone numbers or what kind of calls that they're making. You're trying to track the information and what is being said.
Let me add one thing. I've been overseas to a lot of different countries, and some point in time, we do have to understand that, you know, after the couple of attempts at bombing and attempts of things going on and the World Trade Center, there's a lot of things that you need to listen to, just like Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma and all these other things. So there's a lot of things going on in America with these militia groups, and, you know, President Obama had this. They were wearing T-shirts with a target on them as though they were going to shoot him. So there's a lot of things they need to listen for. So I don't care. Listen to my phone calls.
But you know, and I totally disagree, because you know what? Don't we have a constitutional right to privacy? So I disagree with that, because I think when you begin to give up a little of this and a little of that, that's when you end up in trouble. First of all, I think if I'm not a terrorist. No. If I'm not a terrorist and I'm not a criminal, I should not have my conversations listened to. I should not have my most private thoughts listened to by people that I am totally unbeknownst to me that they're listening to me. I think that's wrong. I will never agree to that.
Nobody's a terrorist or a criminal until they get caught.
The people in the Boston
bombing, they was like, oh, he went to school here. He was just so nice. And I'm saying, nobody's a terrorist or a criminal until they get caught.
AJ?
Well, that's true, but I think if you use that same theory, then all laws should be the same. But we know disproportionately they're poor black folks, poor minorities. I understand what you're saying, but I think they should have some reasonable suspicion to monitor your calls, not just across the board. It should be some reason, because that's what probable cause is. And if you do that, and that's why there's such a problem with the police.
And let's go here. Let me piggyback on that. First of all, this is the thing. If you think the person is committing some type of criminal act, go get a warrant. Do it the right way. Don't eavesdrop on the phone call without a warrant. At least there should be a paper trail that it happened.
Yeah.
So I don't ever agree that they can just listen because if I ever find out and can prove that you're listening without a warrant, trust me, I'm gonna follow suit on you. So I think that's wrong. I think that's absolutely wrong, and I think we should be very careful about giving up our rights, because people should not be able to listen.
They did it anyway.
Well, but if they don't have probable cause, then they shouldn't just be able to detain me. But we do know that sometimes, even without probable cause, they can detain you. I mean, give me a piece of paper, tell me what you're charging me with, what is it being alleged. You can't just come pick me up and keep me for 10 days just because we want to.
True. Don't even give me a phone call. True. I agree. Cool, focus.
I'm still here.
You want to chime in before we move on?
No, y'all doing just fine on that topic there. I'm I don't believe that shit. I'm worried about that, though. You know, as well as anyone else, for them just echo, because I do believe they be listening on my conversations. And by me being a community activist and whatnot, and have filed different complaints against different entities, school officials and law enforcement agencies and employment agencies and whatnot. It kind of, you know, sticks in the back of your mind that they're kind of watching you or something. I know we have one FBI agent who don't like me from Sherman, Texas, you know, and he's been trying to find something on me, but my hands are streaking clean on what he's looking for. And so
we have to take a lesson from some of our leaders, both well-known and not well-known. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr., Edgar Meivers, Malcolm X, they pretty much already knew that their phones were being tapped and so forth. But, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, that's why we need to talk. We need to have dialogue. We need to also get people on board, because at the end of the day, there's some of these things we're going to have to roll our sleeves up, and as you're doing, and we're going to have to fight it, because they have these laws that are very generic so that they don't actually have to get a warrant or they don't really even have to have probable cause. And that's dangerous.
And you know what? And I myself, you know, have been a victim of a full or PD harassment for over 2 years now. And listen, they listen to my phone calls, the phone calls of my family members and friends that I talk to on a regular basis, wiretap their phones. That's just wrong. I'm not involved in any criminal activity, nor is anybody that I associate with, yet the phone calls are tapped. That's not fair. I shouldn't have to worry about every single thing I say on the phone, whether or not it's being recorded or listened to. You know what? If I'm doing something criminal, they should go get a warrant and arrest me. If I'm doing something criminal, then they should go get a warrant to listen to my phone calls. They should not automatically be given carte blanche to put taps on everybody's phones. So I say y'all have to be careful when you want to give up your rights because, in my opinion, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. Let's listen to everybody's conversation. Then why don't we listen to all the cops' conversations? Why don't we listen to all the judges' conversations? So across the board, I would never agree.
They're classified. That's what they're
exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, when you get through, it's classified for them, but it's not classified for us. So I just say something's wrong when you're calling yourself members of law enforcement, but you become bad cops to get, I guess what you're saying are bad people, but if they're bad people, then you should go about it the right way to get them. I mean,
yes,
in my opinion, if you've been following somebody for 2 years and harassing somebody for 2 years, you should have plenty of warrants out there. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is, because you should have plenty of stuff on them by now. And so when you get through, it's just wrong. Across the board, y'all, it's just wrong. Listen, guys. Again, I have enjoyed y'all's company tonight. I really have. I mean, we've talked about a little of everything. Hopefully we brought everybody up to speed on some stories that maybe they missed or just wanted a replay on or wanted us to chime in on what we thought about the particular story. You know, I'm troubled by some of the things in the headlines these days. And, you know, hopefully, you know, our world's going to become a better place, but it doesn't look like it. So to Mr. Khufu Kush, A.J. Houston, and Major Christopher Vaughn, thank you again so much for being with me tonight. I enjoyed y'all chiming in on these topics and us chopping it up, and we will do this once a month, y'all. We will come right here center stage and talk about what's hot topics in the news, and we hope that y'all join us right here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. This is what we do. Also, a reminder, if y'all have a topic y'all like to see Center Stage cover, drop me a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. That's centerstageradio@yahoo.com, and I will definitely consider it. Also, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, y'all, we'd like to know what y'all think about how we're doing. Listen, I can take constructive criticism as well as anybody. If you think we can do things better, I'd love to hear from you. If you think we're doing a pretty good job, I'd like to hear from you as well. We always like feedback, whether it's positive or negative. We just want to know what you think about Center Stage and the job that we're doing here. Next week, y'all, we're gonna hopefully get on John Whitehead. He's the author of A Government of Wolves. That's about the police state that we're living in, y'all, and a whole bunch of other stuff that he's covered. Really good book. And we're hoping to get him on next week to talk about his new book, A Government of Wolves. And that is going to be really one good read. I wish y'all go get the book and really be on board next week if we can get him on. And just follow with us as we talk about the things that he's covered in his book. It's just awesome. Okay, y'all, listen. Thank y'all again for hanging out with me tonight. Thank you to Mr. A.J. Houston, Mr. Khufu Kush, and Major Christopher Bonds for hanging out with me tonight. And we will see you all right here next week, same time, same bat channel. Carrie Hines, till next week. Bye-bye.